Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey friends, welcome to the Tens and Bagels podcast. This is a special edition post women's tournament. We're recording this like literally 15 minutes after Coco Gauff just hit the winning point. I watched her grab the trophy right now, and Owen's pretty happy about it. What's up, Mitch?
Hey man, how are you? Yeah. That was amazing. That was so nice to see you, wasn't it? Like, oh my god. We were on a Twitter space midway through the match. Did you think that was going to happen after the first set?
Oh boy, absolutely not. I mean, I just think that I thought Coco was just being overpowered, and I was like, that I don't see a way that she can get out of this. But I think she kind of thought about Djokovic, Medvedev, Caroline Wozniacki, and like Serena Williams, and Victoria Azarenka, all these people that like can become like really good defensively as well, and just started doing that. And by the third set, she was just dictating. She was the one. It wasn't in her hands, even though she wasn't necessarily hitting the hardest. Like, you could tell that like Arena just Sabalenka had no idea like where to hit, like what to do. Like, she was lost. Like, she was hitting as hard as always. She wasn't missing that much in terms of like her rally shots weren't bad, but it was just kept coming back. And you know, like at the end of the day, like Coco was the better player. Like, zero doubt about that. So yeah.
Did you see the first point in the 5-3 game when Coco was serving for the second set? They had a forehand-to-forehand rally, and Gauff just hit a winner down the line.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone thought that was going to happen against Sabalenka's forehand. Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, I think she's the best defender on tour right now. She's so fast. Some of these games are crazy. Sabalenka was putting like overheads into the net and like early in the first set because the defense was like already having an impact. And then the way she sort of like took over down the stretch was that was pretty special.
Yeah. So I actually checked. You know, on the last podcast, you had picked Sabalenka to win against Iga Świątek in an epic final. But I'm pretty sure you said like at some point, I'm gonna have to go back and check in again, that you thought maybe this is Coco's time. I remember something around those lines. I'm not sure if it was recorded, but I do remember you saying something like that. But like, as she was going through the draw, I thought, not to go into like a super deep, lengthy US Open final review, but like, as in like US Open tournament review, but as she was going through, I was like, well, I have seen this before. Like, she has played a Grand Slam final before. She is not unheard of that Coco would go deep in a Grand Slam draw, but she definitely looked different. I guess it's always hard to say in hindsight, but I had the feeling that she believed that she could be the champion. She was really taking it one match at a time. When she was going in against Sabalenka, I thought, well, it's good that she believes, but I don't. But like, I guess she had a very sweet message about those people who didn't believe in her at the end.
Yeah.
Although, I'm not included in that because I always thought that she had the potential to do this people. But I just didn't believe it was now. I thought it was going to take like another season for it to happen. But yeah, man, impressive.
Yeah, the speed of the progress was pretty amazing this summer. I mean, so she, like, and I did have her as a contender before the tournament started, but I had her below Iga, Sabalenka, and Rybakina, and maybe even below on Schibber as well. But in the middle of her match against Caroline Wozniacki, I sort of had a moment where, she was down a break at the very start of the third set of that match. I think Wozniacki was serving like 1-0, 30-15, and Brad Gilbert is like, put some more air under your shots. And she just comes out with like these back-to-back, like flat, risky cross-court backhand winners. And I realized like during that stretch that like I just thought she was going to win. Like I didn't really have like that match, not that tournament. I didn't really have an explanation for it. But like, you know, you had Wozniacki defending so well, playing really well, was up a break in the third. And I still just thought Goff was going to win. And when she came through that match, I was like, okay, yeah, you know, she's still a contender. Then but Iga lost. I'm like, okay, draws
him. That opens up a lot, yeah.
And then when she just demolished Ostapenko, it's like, okay, like now it could definitely be happening. But then the semi wasn't like her best match, and the first set of the final was tough too. She was really, really being overpowered. And wasn't she was down break points at the start of the second set too, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she had to fend off like a double break. I think she was 15-40 down or something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. But it wasn't the best start either. But it started to change a little bit towards the first set, but I thought it's probably not going to be enough. I think Sabalenka is going to be able to hold her serve at the very least, which also didn't happen. What happened, like, I felt like the semifinal was her most difficult match, I found. Like, well, not obviously that she was down a break against Wozniacki, but of the second week, I thought like the semifinal was so nervy. Like Muguruza was extremely tense, and so was Goff. I think like the thought of like reaching the final, and maybe it took her losing the first set for her to like maybe wake up, or you know, just like letting it rip and just kind of like focus on what's happening now. Because like maybe she was thinking too hard about like her opponent and just how tough he would be. I think Coco has been Sabalenka maybe at least once before. I'm not sure how it was her head-to-head, but...
Yeah, I think this is the fourth time she's beaten her.
Actually. So, yeah, it wasn't a matchup that I would say, oh, she has absolutely no chance. Like, but I thought like the occasion was going to be too much for her to handle, whereas I thought Sabalenka was going to be like right on it like from the start. And she was, but then things changed so quickly. I couldn't even believe how impressive, like, how mature, I guess, like big match player Coco was at that time. I was like, man, that's impressive. The fact that she's able to just, like, go into absolute lockdown mode, like just loop in some forehands, which weren't aggressive most of the time, but then just wouldn't just spray errors all the time, which is a great start. Like, I mean, if you don't always have to be hitting winners off the all the time. Like if you can find a game plan that works in that way, just do it. Like Djokovic does that all the time. Like, why not? It works. Yeah. She won the tournament, so yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that third set, I don't think she made an unforced error until like the fifth or sixth game of that third set. Like there was a set at one point where it was like unforced errors in the third set, and it was like a 9-0.
And I was like, I think it was like, at some point it was like 14-2.
I think that says it all. We say a lot Sabalenka can like hit through anyone. And she's proven that like she can hit through like pretty much anyone. Like she can hit through Iga Swiatek, who's another great defender, but I don't think she can hit through Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
What we saw. I mean, some of those gets were crazy. Even when Sabalenka was like winning the point, like, you know, the rallies where it's like the defender makes enough gets that you're just like, okay, the attacker is going to miss. Like, it's there are a few points where I thought that and Sabalenka would still like put it away. But I think there were enough that it was just like she knew she had to hit a tiny target. I think that something maybe Sabalenka could have done a little more. And she did do it a bit more towards the end of the match. Like when she got that break back, one of the breaks back in the third set. I think you have to hit behind Coco more. Because I think when she gets running back and forth, she's just too fast. And it's too hard to hit a winner. So I think you have to wrong foot her a little more. But man, some of those retrievals were just insane.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a good moment for Sabalenka. Like, obviously now she's number one. So I actually even wrote a tweet that, like, I mean, if there is a season that she could be like, yeah, okay, I guess I lost it, but I'll come back. It's like she already won Australian Open, became number one, reached at least semifinals in every single one of the Grand Slams. Like, is she going to be waking up tomorrow sad that she didn't win it? But, like, I think she's going to look at some other things and be like, I guess I can leap with that. I mean, at least for now, like, and then coming back next year. But there's so much for her to learn from this match, because a player like this, like Coco, and now that Coco has won the title, she's just going to run into her a lot more. Like, it's not something that she's going to be like, oh, okay, like, she came in, like, as a number 80 in the world. We can kind of consider how I want Slam Wonder. And maybe I'll never have to see her again. But, like, and she's a top 10 player. Even if she didn't win, she was always going to be coming back for this. So, it's definitely a point in her career that she gets to be like, okay, how do I beat this kind of player? Like, when... Yeah. And it's like, you could make the case that maybe Świątek was somewhat similar, but she could still like find those weaknesses in Świątek that maybe aren't there in Coco, in Coco's game. And I do feel like she kind of failed to try to find more solutions. I feel like she just maybe started to keep pushing really hard in the same game plan. It didn't work. I mean, it's like in the heat of the moment and things like that, but I think it's going to be a really important point in the future to try and throw in some more slices, like maybe some more drop shots, like just try to mix it up a bit, even moonballing more. Something's gotta give. Like, if just hitting as hard as you can doesn't hit a winner, something has to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, first of all, you said Goff's like a top 10 player. I think she's 6 right now. I think she's gonna be 3 soon, so she's on that top tier now. And about Sabalenka, I think it's interesting. So if someone asks me about her year, the first thing I'm going to say is Australian Open champion, right? Her year. And then the second thing you say is world number one. Her year unequivocally has been a success. But at the same time, it's been a long time since that Australian Open now. She's had 3 majors in a row where in a late match, semifinal, final, she couldn't close. And now those are going to be fresher in her mind than that Australian Open. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, sometimes we see with players, like, they win a major and the nerves just kind of go away. That hasn't happened with Sabalenka. She still has those issues. And so I'm interested to see what the next move for her is. I agree with you tactically. I think she's got underrated defense. So maybe, like, I mean, you don't really want to get into like a scrap with Goff, but I think like lengthening rallies, at least until like she found the accuracy with her forehand again, could have been smart, because her forehand went off the boil. She's got a good drop shot. Maybe use that a little more. I was going to say cert and volley, but that's it's a losing play if you don't really have like Carlos Alcaraz touch at this point. I'm not sure. I think, like you said, I think there's like a lot for her to learn still, which I think you can take as a compliment because she's so damn good already. Yeah. I think this has been, it's been a really good year for her, but also there's been a lot of pain. So I'm interested to see what comes next.
Yeah. It's, I think one of the good things that tennis does offer, I think, is the fact that the Grand Slam is not the end of the season. So it's like, there's still some stuff to do. So for players is good, and there's the good and the bad. The bad, obviously, it's too many matches. Like, people are just like absolutely exhausted at this point. But at the same time, like, there's more opportunities if you can stay fresh or just take a bit off and just come back for the next big title or next big tournament and try to win it, try to like apply some new things. And she will have, at the very least, like the WTA finals that she can try to, you know, like make a big case that, like, if she is able to end the year as world number one, like, I think it's always very good to like end the year with that title. I think it's good confidence for the next year. It's good confidence for herself to say, like, well, I'm, especially now that she's become number one without winning the title, it's just like, okay, no, I really do deserve this. I am really that good. I'm really a top player, and people have to beat me now. It's like, it has to be okay with having a target on her back at that point. So it's kind of like Świątek was, and it started like wobbling a bit, but then she kind of came through a lot better than a lot of people thought it would happen. So I think it's shaping up to be a really good end of the season, seeing like what happens, who's gonna try to, like, you know, put themselves like in the pole position to, you know, getting ahead of like the off season and back in the Australian Open in January. So
I think the WTA finals is a great opportunity for a lot of players, because last year that was kind of what kicked off Sabalenka's run, right? Like, she beat Iga there 6-1 in the third, I think. And I think that was very much a confidence booster going into 2023. Like, I'm not sure if without that match, like, she wins the Australian Open. And now it's almost like the roles are reversed, right? Like, I feel like maybe Swiatek could, like, use the WTA finals to remind everyone, like, hey, I'm still here. Like, I'm still, like, I held number one for, like, 75 weeks, and, like, I'm going to be right back at the top at, like, 2024. If Goff could win it, she could be number one soon, right? She's, like, she's at three. Sabalenka isn't in the lead by very much, and I think that, I mean, we've talked about why she's vulnerable. I think the tour is really, really strong right now. Like, there's, there are, like, five or six or seven players at the top who, like, I mean, even Pegula, like, she figures out that quarterfinal thing. Like, she can take out pretty much anyone. Like, Jabeur, I think when she's healthy, can beat anyone. Rybakina, once she recovers physically, like, it's really, really fun at the top right now.
Yeah, that's a, it's a really interesting tail end of the season now, especially. I think Goff just made it everything even more interesting, just, like, asserting herself. He's, like, one of the top contenders for every title, essentially, at this point.
Yeah.
So it just adds more, like, you know, fire, you know, gas to the fire. I think it's just everything just looking really, really good for the WTA right now. They have to take that opportunity because, man, it's the narrative is just, they're just writing themselves at this point. It's just, there's just so much goodness right now. And yeah, just excited to see how the race goes for number one and for the last few titles of the season.
Yeah, me too. And in terms of the WTA taking advantage of this, like, announcing the location for your year-end finals, like, a month or two before it happens is not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Like,
it's been a tough, like, season for the WTA in that regard, but
yeah,
we'll take the positives and try to boost on those, try to bet on those, like, see how we can make things, you know, mitigate all of the problems that you've had so far, and just try to, you know, just pump up the marketing on this point right now. There's, like, start off like right away. Like, this is, I think it would be a really good opportunity for them to, you know, use this moment, especially with an American champion. Like, America is a really big,
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sports consumer, so I think it could help them out on that regard. So
yeah. And I think, like, so I'm pulling up the rankings. I think that these WTA finals could be, like, the best field in a while. Or, like, the most exciting field in a while. Like, okay, so let's see. Rankings. You have, I'm gonna start with Sabalenka because she's not one right now, but she will be soon. So you have Sabalenka, Swiatek, Pegula, Rybakina, Jabeur, Goff, Garcia, Sakkari. Maybe there's, like, a bit of a drop off in, like, seven and eight there, but, like, that top six, holy crap. And then, like, I think in a lot of ways, like, the WTA is more exciting than the ATP right now.
Yeah.
Like, when Medvedev was beating Alcaraz, I tweeted something like, it would be really good for tennis if Medvedev wins this, because then you have, like, essentially a big three instead of a big two. And I got, like, 1,200 likes or something, because, like, all the ATP had going for it this tournament was, like, the promise of a Djokovic-Alcaraz match, and then you had Ben Shelton. That was, like, basically all that happened in the ATP, right? Like, can you think of any other exciting storylines before Medvedev won last night?
No, not really. The only thing that they had going for themselves was just, like, Instagrammable moments and TikTok moments with, like, the phone, like, hanging up from Djokovic.
Yeah.
That was, and it's, like, not tennis related. It's, like, it's pettiness related, like, drama related. Just fun, but as in, like, when, as I wrote as well, like, in an article that I put, it's like, this is cool and take advantage of that. This was really fun. But the tennis was kind of tough. When I looked at the draw for Djokovic, and then at some point it just fell apart, and I just saw like, well, we have three Americans in the quarterfinals on the bottom side. The bad news is that the other quarterfinalist is Djokovic. So I mean,
yeah. I was trying to think of other like exciting moments on the men's side. I mean, I guess when Jarry went up two sets on Djokovic, everyone was excited for like a minute.
Yeah. It's so hard though, because Jarry goes up two sets and it's like, wow, when can we go back and see that this happened before? Exactly. Okay, Djokovic just won all of those times. It's like,
right. And like even the stacked half of the draw wasn't, I mean, he had Sinner Zverev, but like because of Zverev, I think that was tough to enjoy. So like he didn't get the Alcaraz Sinner match. Yeah, I think besides Alcaraz Medvedev and like the Ben Shelton run, there is like you had nothing going on the men's side. Women's side, you had Ostapenko taking out Swiatek.
Yeah. Caroline Wozniacki come back, really.
Yeah. Like, holy crap. She's like, this is a new comeback. And she gets to the fourth round and ends up a break in the third set against the woman who ended up winning the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. I think you just had much more going on the women's side. Like, you had Jabeur trying to, you know, getting pretty deep in the draw despite being, like, visibly not well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you had the battle for number one between Sabalenka and Swiatek. And, I think the men's side, it's just, like, it's so top-heavy right now. You have Djokovic and Alcaraz, and now you have Medvedev on hard courts, too. Everyone else is so far behind, man. Yeah. Everyone's, like, getting excited about Taylor Fritz because he wins four matches really easily. Like, he can't scratch Djokovic. Tsitsipas, I don't even know what his problem is at the U.S. Open. You know, Sinner's still not quite there in five setters. Like, there's a massive gap there. And the women, I think that top level is like twice as big right now.
Yeah. And it's funny how, like you mentioned, the race for number one, which technically existed in the men's side, but like Djokovic just needed to win one match. So even that was like just completely boring, because like you knew what was going to happen. Like, there is a one in maybe like 10,000 chance that Djokovic is going to lose his first round match.
Yeah.
When was the last time this even happened? Like, if that has even ever happened. Like, I mean, I'm not sure.
But... Right. And I think, like, and Djokovic has been number one for so long that it's like, I think the women's side was also compelling because Sabalenka had never been number one before.
Yeah.
And Iga had, like, held it for so long at once that, like, it's like, how long can she hold on to it, you know? But, like, Djokovic has had so many stints there. He's already been number one for longer than anyone else, so it's just like when I see that Djokovic is number one again, I'm like, okay, this just doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like, oh, he's back in the top 10. It sounds like that at this point. I also just kind of going a little bit into a preview of tomorrow, like just talking about Medvedev, like I feel like it's so good that he's playing well again, because man, like, he was the one guy who was the disruptor in a good way for, like, most of 2020, 2019 even, 2021. And then he had all his problems. There was also the political issues that he couldn't play Wimbledon and whatnot. And then he just kind of fell away. Like, I think he left the top 10, like, at the beginning of this year. And then he got back into it after, like, his, like, five finals run. I was like, oh, good, Medvedev's back. But then Alcaraz reasonably put him back in his place in a way that just, oh, okay, so we are still sort of just talking about Djokovic and Alcaraz. Medvedev's a good third, no. So it's like, but now he's like, okay, this guy's also back. Like, he's coming back to claim his hardcourt specialist title, and he's not joking about it. And I think it's really fun to see Medvedev playing well again. It's good to see that he's playing Djokovic in a final again. I particularly think that it's not going to be very close tomorrow. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe I'm not exactly like that sold into Medvedev being a great player all of a sudden again. So I feel like I'm just being overly cautious about it. I would say maybe Djokovic in four. But it's like, I really want to believe in an epic final tomorrow. I really do. And I think I would also be really happy if Medvedev do win the title. Because I think it would be just very interesting for the whole ATP scenario end of the year, and three-way rivalry. It's going to be really cool.
I mean, that'd be a hell of a statement, right? Like, everyone has been talking about Alcaraz and Djokovic nonstop since the French Open, and then you beat them both. Like, that'd be pretty special.
It would be.
I see what you're saying about, like, you're not convinced it's going to be an FA final. I think, like, it's just hard to play as well as Medvedev did two matches in a row.
Yeah.
And, like, look, there's, like, a bit of a debate going around on Twitter of, like, is that the best he's ever played? Or, like, was the U.S. Open final 2 years ago better? Like, guys, this was so much better. Like, the U.S. Open final 2 years ago, Djokovic is fried. Medvedev has a great serving day, and he doesn't have to do that much else, right? This, like, he's winning forehand-to-forehand exchanges with Carlos Alcaraz. This matchup was death for him. He was completely uncompetitive at Wimbledon, completely uncompetitive at Indian Wells. Before that U.S. Open, like, Medvedev had matched up well with Djokovic before. Like, I know he got crushed at the Australian Open, but, like, he had played him tough before that, and he played badly at the Australian Open that year. Like, with Alcaraz, it just seemed like nothing he did was going to matter. And he came out with, like, that was really, really special performance. Yeah. Like, the angles he was finding on the return, people, like, he had heard nothing but, like, move up on the return for, like, 2 years. And instead, he stays back there and just finds, like, the most beautiful angles on the return you've ever seen. Like, no, that was the best match in Medvedev's career, as far as I'm concerned. And, like, I think he can win the final. Like, he matches up well with Djokovic.
Yeah.
Djokovic hasn't been tested. I mean, I think if Medvedev plays that well again, he's going to win. Djokovic doesn't like the U.S. Open, so.
Yeah. Could you imagine, like, if this is Djokovic. I just stumbled upon this stat, like, watching the preview, I think, or maybe somebody tweeted that. And I think this is Djokovic's 10th final. At the
US Open. He only won three of them. If he
That's
loses,
insane.
Yeah, like even if he wins this one, he's only got a 40% success rate in the finals.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah,
and it's funny. Like, you look at his opponents, and it's like one loss to Federer, two to Nadal, and so you're like, okay. But then you have Wawrinka, Medvedev, Murray. That's all of them. Yeah, and, like, at least a couple of those he really should have won. I do think Djokovic is, like, a slight favorite. I feel like it's kind of like the French Open, where, a lot of people favored Alcaraz to win that semi, and Djokovic sort of just showed up and played, like, amazing tennis.
Yeah.
And I kind of get the sense that a similar thing is going to happen, but, like, Medvedev's a really hard guy to, like, beat easily.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a war.
I do. Sorry?
You want to pick?
Oh, yeah. I already said it. I think it's going to be Djokovic in four. I think it's his time again in New York every so often.
Yeah.
Every full solar eclipse, Djokovic comes in and wins New York again. But I think for in terms of, like, just try to be very reasonable in terms of, like, looking at how the semis went by. I think that was best case scenario for Medvedev, playing as well as he did, getting out of the court in, like, about, like, 3 hours, I think. That was,
yeah.
After in four sets, after a horrible, horrible, horrible situation in the quarterfinals against Rublev, people just, like, kept thinking, like, is his body going to hold? Is it, how much of an effect did it have? And I think this one proved that Medvedev's still extremely fit. And I think he was saying, like, oh, I think experts, like, I'd have vomited or, like, felt, like, really bad. He goes, like, great, or something like that in an interview. Just sort of, like, how he said the thing about, like, about Rublev and the Australian Open after the, like, 80-shot rally or something that Rublev won but then lost the match because of that.
To bring up that tournament, because I remember adamantly saying to you and Vance on this podcast that it's going to be
Djokovic
in the final. And back then, I was wearing the Medvedev glasses.
Yeah.
You know, it was I loved that, man. But I think the hype has worn off for me. Enough has happened in the last 2 years where I'm like, okay, he's got some work to do, and so I do want to pick him. Like, yeah. I think if he wins, it would be really, really, really special.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be amazing. But I think it's just too hard to play like that well for too much in
yeah.
I think there's a chance that Djokovic comes out and just like, and look, he didn't have to do anything special against Shelton. He didn't like, I don't think he played risky tennis for like 1 point of that match. He's like hitting everything down the middle. I guess he had some net approaches on the third set. So I think like the step up in opposition is going to be much more dramatic for Djokovic than it is for Medvedev. That's something Medvedev has. I think this is really hard. I'm going to say Djokovic in five.
Five? Yeah. I'd be down for a five setter. Like, seriously, even it's always good. I think if Medvedev wins, I think it's going to be in five. I think Djokovic is going to, unless the crowd is really not on his side, which he has proven to, you know, be able to control, but it's always a little tougher. I think the third set against Shelton only got as close as he got because of the crowd. if something happens, it's always cool to see those guys playing together. I feel like it's gonna be hopefully it's gonna be a good match no matter what. But my pick is Djokovic in four. There's gonna be a tiebreak in the middle. I'd say Medvedev takes the third set 6-1 and loses the fourth set.
All right. Yeah. Like a 2011 Wimbledon final thing.
Basically, yeah.
You'd be 6-1, 1-6 in there.
Yeah.
If anyone listening to this isn't like familiar with like the Djokovic Medvedev rivalry, go watch their match at the ATP Cup 3 years ago. Good highlights on YouTube. That is one of the best matches I've ever seen. I think that was the best match of 2020. They do, the way they move and the way they defend, there's like a point in the middle of the second set where Medvedev just like runs Djokovic back and forth for like 30 shots. And at the end, he just wins it with like this no pace backhand winner into the open court because Djokovic is dead. And Djokovic is like hunched over for, you know, like 10 seconds after that point. It's amazing. I hope we see some of that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be one of those matches where like at the start, the quality is like terrible. And then it just slowly gets better and better. And then towards the end, everyone's going to be like, is this the best match of the year? And it's like, no, you idiot. Remember the first set. But I do think it's going to build. And I think the moment that decided the match is going to come late. I think like usually when these two have played in majors, it's come early. Like you had straight sets in the US Open Final in 2021, straight sets in the Australian Open Final same year. I think maybe there will be like a third set tiebreak or something like that. And then the winner of that is going to kind of pull away. But
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's very hard to pick.
Yeah. And just to finalize, and I think I forgot to ask you that, but after the first set for Coco Gauff Sabalenka, did you think that Gauff was going to do it? Because you asked me this question. I don't think I threw it back to you.
No. So I said before the match, it's either going to be Sabalenka in two or Gauff in three.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I got that right.
Yeah.
When Gauff served out that, I think after the first game of the third set, I was like, okay, like Gauff has this. But no, after the first set, I thought Sabalenka was too good. I mean, I was saying to you on the space in the middle of the second set, Sabalenka was like an unmovable object, or like,
yeah, you didn't see that.
So yeah, I didn't see it coming. I think, defense wins titles, you know, like you can defend that well over that long a period of time. Like psychologically, it's hard to deal with. I think Gauff, that forehand isn't like, it's not a great forehand, but she's become great at protecting it and even attacking with it when she can. So, all the congrats to her. I'm really, really impressed.
Yeah, same here. And as we said before, we're really excited for the rest of the season. And as you also were discussing just now, we are excited for tomorrow's match. Hopefully I'll be able to upload this podcast very early this Saturday. So we'll see about that. But good quick call in the middle of the finals weekend. But see you next week for the full recap of the tournament.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.